Hello, science fair participants. Where are they? Oh, you're first. It's kind of intimidating. Look at all these pictures.
A little bit.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good to see you.
See you too.
Well, we're so proud of you.
Thank you.
I was reading up on you. You've done great stuff.
Thank you very much, husband.
All right. So the, I don't know if folks are aware of this story. This young lady is remarkable. They're all remarkable, but I think it's appropriate we start right here. Tell everybody your name.
I'm Alana Simon.
Alana Simon. And Alana, here's a picture of you when you got sick. So what happened?
Well, when I was 12 years old, I was diagnosed with a rare form of a pediatric liver cancer called fibrolamellar hepatocellular carcinoma.
Wow.
It's a mouthful.
That's so impressive that you can say it.
Years of practice.
Yeah.
And not many people know much about the disease. No one understood it at the time. And that was pretty scary, but I was lucky in that they caught it early enough. So through, you know, a liver surgery in which they resected most of my liver, they were able to get the entire tumor out. And I've been completely fine ever since, which is incredible.
And you look great.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So then a couple years later, I had this internship at a cancer research lab, and I learned about this thing called genetic sequencing, mm-hmm. where you look through someone's DNA, which is the stuff that encodes for, you know, your entire body. And you look at people's normal cells and their tumor cells, and you try to figure out what the difference is, what's causing this cancer.
Right.
And I realized that would be perfect for fibrolamellar, because you don't have to have some kind of base understanding of the disease. And as a pediatric cancer, it seemed to be perfect for, you know, looking at your DNA to find the driver mutations.
Right.
Because since you're younger, you'll have less random mutations.
Right.
So I talked to my surgeon, actually, who had, you know, cured me. And he mentored me, and he actually got a lot of the samples that I used, and he helped me start this project where I was doing genetic sequencing on the kind of cancer I had had.
Right.
And what we ended up finding is this one common mutation in every single patient we've looked at,
right.
that seems to be causing this disease.
Right.
So if you look at these, I made some nice swim noodle
these
chromosomes.
Right.
So chromosomes are where you have all of your DNA stored, which has your genes that encodes for, you know, everything. And so here, in blue, I have one gene, and in green, I have another. And what happens in fibrolamellar patients, here is a normal person's chromosome,
right.
and here is a person with cancer. And so, yeah, you can see there's this one deletion. So if you look at this, when this middle part gets deleted,
right.
you can see it's noodles, these two genes fuse together, and you get this weird chimeric gene.
Mm-hmm.
The chimera is, you know, from Greek mythology, you have the head of one creature and the body of another. So here, you have the head of one gene and the body of another. And so that's what happens in these fibrolamellar patients.
Mm-hmm.
And when these two genes fuse together, this weird new chimera protein is what then goes and turns on all these other genes and actually causes this cancer in patients. And so now that we know this, we can create a blood test to actually test people and diagnose them
early. So we can catch it even quicker.
Exactly.
Because we know exactly what we're looking for.
Precisely.
And you then published this in Science Magazine.
Yes.
and received Young Champion of Cancer Research Award from...
Yeah.
The American Cancer Society.
Yes, it's been incredible.
We're so proud of you.
Thank you.
Now, can I just say, I did not do this at 12, 13, or 18. And it's just inspiring. And how about, your parents must just, like, cry every time they see you. Because
yeah.
they do. I'm sure they will today as well. So the this is just a sampler of the kind of outstanding young talent that we've got. All right, I got to get a good picture, Pete. This is my photographer. All right. Are you getting the chromosomes
yes.
in the background?
All right.
So where are you going to school?
I'm going to Harvard next fall.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are you excited about that? What are you doing during the summer?
I'm so excited. I'm actually working on the lab, going to start working on the blood test and going to Israel.
Yeah. Are you interested in the research side, or do you think you might actually want to go to medical school?
I have no idea. I think I'm going to pursue research.
Yeah.
Computer science is what allowed me to do
right.
all of this research, so
yeah.
I'm definitely planning on studying computer science, but I'll find some way to apply that to research or
good.
Whatever I choose.
Well, we're very proud of you. Give me a hug.
Thank you very much.
That's great. You're just doing great.
Thank you.
Unbelievable. That's wonderful. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Thank you.
I can tell you're a high-powered guy. What's your name?
I'm Peyton, P-E-Y-T-O-N.
Great to see you. And where are you from, Peyton?
I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So what do we got here? What is all this?
So I actually have two projects.
You have two? One was not enough. You decided you had to have two.
I don't know. They asked me to bring two.
All right.
So Helen assigned retractable training wheels. that allows a LIDAR to adjust the height of the training wheels while actually riding a bike. So when you're feeling confident, you just twist the traction handle.
That's smart.
And the wheels can come up.
So you can basically, rather than get your screwdriver, you're like unscrewing everything.
There you go.
And then you realize I'm still kind of wobbly, and then you got to put them back on.
That's
here. You can just kind of see how are you feeling during the course of the thing. Right.
But in any case, if you feel like you're about to fall and lose your balance,
right away.
Comes right back down. And in any position, it locks in place. So even if you start to lose your balance, it will still give you enough time for people to twist back to the starting position.
I could still use this now. Do you have an adult version, or is it only on smaller bikes?
Well, I'm working with a kids' bike manufacturer right now to help get it on the market, but I'm sure it could be applied to other ages.
I think that's probably right.
Yeah.
have you patented this?
I have a patent pending on both of these, actually.
Okay, well, let's hear about the other one before we get into the patent issue. All right, so what's the second project you got here?
So here I redesigned the Sandal sandbag, replacing the traditional sand with polymer and salt. You know, living in Florida, I know how devastating hurricanes and saltwater flooding can be.
Right.
You know, we just had Hurricane Sandy in the news, and I survived through Hurricane Wilma when I was 4 by just hiding in the closet with my mom, which was such a scary experience.
I can imagine. You still remember that, huh?
Oh, I do. Many parts of it.
Now, how old are you now?
I'm 12.
Okay. All right.
And, you know, today, while sandbags are the most common method of flood protection, they can be heavy and difficult to transport.
Right, I remember, because I've helped out sometimes with hurricanes. And,
And they also leave gaps in between the individual bags when you stack them.
They don't compress together. Right.
So I wanted to redesign the Sandal sandbag, replacing the stain with polymer and salt. So when dry, my bags are really lightweight. They weigh only 4 pounds. But then when you add water, it expands and becomes heavy and becomes 30 pounds and offers protection against saltwater flooding.
So if I know that the flood's coming, I can pack these up. We can deliver them to the site much easier. You can fit more bags in there, right? And you don't even have to add water because by definition, the water's coming in to hit the bag.
Well, yes, you can do that. That is definitely a way. If before the flood, you want to be sure, you can also hose it down.
You just hose it down.
That's another way you would want to do it. And the other advantage is if you stack them when they're lightweight, you don't have to carry all these heavy bags.
Right.
But also, the polymer will expand and it'll fill in the gaps between the individual bags while still being bonded by these interlocking fastener systems. So it'll still stick together, and you won't have the gaps in between the individual bags that you have with traditional sandbags.
Okay, look, time out here. Now, where did you get the idea of this one? I kind of get, right? Because basically, you skin your knee, and you thought, you know, we should have a better design on this thing.
Yeah, this was actually one of my sisters who first learned how to ride a bike.
All right. Yeah. So how did you get the idea for the whole polymer thing, though?
Well, you know, I definitely thought about this living in Florida, but for the idea for polymer, you know, for another idea that I had had earlier, I got to learn a little bit about polymer for a university that I went to, University of Mississippi, and I learned a little bit about polymers. And
how old were you when you went to the University of Mississippi?
I was about 8 or so.
Is that right?
Yeah. So polymers to me found everywhere. They're found in our skin tissues, they're found in plants. But the type of polymer that I used here is super absorbent polymer, which takes on water and expands when wet. So as you see here, this is what a polymer looks like when it's all curled up. But then when you add water, it straightens out through hydrogen bonding and it expands like this. Here, you want to try?
I do. I actually have one of these.
Oh, you do? Yeah, it's called a Hoberman sphere.
But they're very cool.
Yeah, it's called a Hoberman sphere.
Sometimes I just stare at them in space.
I know.
Sometimes in the Oval Office, I just look at one of these. Try to fit. You have a patent pending on this as well, huh?
I do. And, you know, but the idea of polymer has, in my sandbag, has been around for a while. People have used it in diapers, in instant snow, and in other sandals bags.
Right.
And it takes on water and expands when wet.
Oh, I see. You can show us.
As you can see here, I've been doing these little mini test tubes for all the other guests. I'll do a big one for you.
Okay. See there?
Watch what's happening.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Now this isn't going to spill over, is it?
No,
is not the blob, is it?
It's not going to.
It's not going to eat up the White House.
Hope not.
There you go.
But the key to my design is the addition of salt. As you can see here, seawater has a higher salt content and is therefore denser and heavier than tap water. Mm-hmm. So as you can see here, the seawater sits below the dyed tap water because right. It has a higher salt content and is therefore denser.
Right.
So I can show you here. What's your favorite color?
Blue.
Okay. I did blue.
Okay, red.
Okay.
All right. It's not really my favorite, but that's all.
Oh.
I'm just
So if you pull this
guy.
If you pull this in without without breaking the surface tension,
yeah.
You can get this dyed tap water to sit on top, just like this.
Just as it is here.
Just as it is here.
Right.
Perfect.
Okay.
And this is important to my sandbag because I didn't want my bags to float away during the flood. Obviously, that would be bad.
Right.
So what I did was I added salt. So the water that came into the bag would be heavier and denser than the approaching seawater. So therefore, it would sink below the approaching seawater so my bags wouldn't float away during the flood.
Well, this is all remarkable stuff. Now, so you're 12. What grade are you in?
I'm in sixth grade.
You're technically in sixth grade. Are you thinking you might try to finish high school a little quicker and get to university a little faster?
Or
do you want to just kind of take your time? And
yeah, you know, actually the program that I'm doing now, it allows me to accelerate in certain areas. So I'm taking like higher level math and science classes. And I'm taking grade level English and other stuff.
That makes
so
perfect
it's
sense.
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's take a good picture. Come on.
Wait,
Pete, where are you at? Oh, here we are. All right. Make sure you got the polymers in here.
Oh, yeah.
So now, one last question. Where do I buy stock in you? Huh? Let's just invest in this guy. And then we'll see, like, 20 years from now, we'll be rich.
You weren't like this?
I was not like this. Really proud of you, man.
Thank you so much.
Huh?
Thank
and you make a great presentation also.
Thank you.
Huh? You have great confidence and clarity in
Thank
how
you.
You're describing what you do.
Thank you so much.
That's wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What's your name?
Deidre Carrillo.
Good to see you, Deidre. Now, is that Deirdre?
Deidre.
Yes. Okay, I got it.
I get it.
Now, this looks like a electric go-kart. Is that what it is?
That's basically what it is.
That's basically what it is. And where are you from?
I'm from San Antonio, Texas.
Okay, and so tell me about how you got involved in this project.
Well, that's a funny story. I was the shortest in my senior class.
Yeah?
And
I can't believe that.
I was. And they said, you would fit perfectly in this car. So that's how it started. And I've been doing this for 3 years.
So describe to me this vehicle. And the goal here is the goal to have, you know, in these contests, the fastest electric car or the one that can travel the furthest, or both?
It's more about going the furthest and being smart on your battery management. That is what the competition is basically about.
So it's like efficiency.
Yeah. Yes.
Right? The goal is how efficient is it relative to the amount of power that's being generated
yes.
electrically. Okay. Well, I clearly cannot fit in this. Are you able to fit in
yes,
it
I'm
still?
Yes, I'm actually able to fit in it.
Would you like to display it, or do you think you won't look cool and you just kind of want to point it?
Yes,
come
definitely.
Come on, let's see it. Come on.
I'll have to get in through you.
Yeah, of course. So how fast does this thing go? That's a pretty serious seatbelt, by the way.
Yes.
That's the same one that we have on Blackhawk.
Oh.
Our Blackhawk helicopters.
Yes, a big guideline is safety, so I do wear motorcycle helmet,
right.
And I am very well taken care of it.
I'll bet. All right. How big was the team that helped you design the car?
We started in a team of 6, and now we're a group of 14.
Okay. you fit like a glove.
Yes.
And what's that little panel there?
This,
what was that? Is that the control?
This tells me the volts and amps. It would. During competition, I am focusing on going in circles and Well, we were supposed to do telemetry. Telemetry would have helped a huge amount. But this tells me how many volts I'm running, how many amps, and I communicate back to my electrical chief. And he tells me how fast to go, to slow down.
So he's going to give you calculations based on optimizing the efficiency of the entire process. The and how fast is are you typically going when you're in the, one of these contests?
The fastest, the constant we want is 35.
35 miles an hour?
35.
That's pretty fast.
Yes. The fastest actually was 38.
I got you. So what are you doing now, now that you've done such an outstanding job? Are you interested in being an engineer? Did this prompt a long-term interest?
Well, my job actually is public relations along with driver. So I'm actually thinking of pursuing public relations.
Excellent.
And part-time driver.
And a part-time driver.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. All right, come on over here. Let's get a good picture here. Look at all these big trophies.
Yes.
Trophies are bigger than you.
Yes.
All right, scoot over so we can see them. There we go. Well, we're very proud of you.
Thank
Congratulations.
You.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What's going on, guys?
How are you doing, Mr.
What's your name, man?
Dejan,
good to see you.
Jerry,
good to see you.
Brooke.
Good to see you. So where are you guys from?
Hudson,
Massachusetts. Yep. And what grade are you in?
Eighth
grade. All right, so what do we got here?
You made a catapult.
It's a catapult.
Yep.
All right, so let's, I assume we got to see it work, right?
Yes, sir.
All right, the before I see it work, tell me, is this been an ongoing project at the school? I mean, does each year, is there sort of a catapult contest, like
no.
a robot building contest, or is this something that kind of happened on its own?
After school, we were part of Raytheon at the Boys and Girls Club. So
Raytheon's a sponsor at the Boys and Girls Club?
Yes.
I
well,
got
we were a part of it last year.
I see.
And we came in second out of 45 teams.
That's excellent. The and what how did you get the idea of catapults, or was it everybody was doing catapults?
No.
So we had a lot of topics to choose from since we all play basketball mostly.
Y'all hoop?
Yep.
Okay.
So we chose basketball, and we wanted to figure out the angle and trajectory to make in a three-pointer.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's what the catapult does.
So that, and that's, so did you construct this whole catapult yourself?
Yeah.
And our Boys and Girls Club director, Gary Viola, helped us make it.
Where'd you get this guy?
Well, he got it, and then we made it. So
it's pretty serious looking guy. All right. The you want to show me how it works?
Yeah.
Now, how fast does this thing go? Is it going to break anything?
No,
we tested it a few times.
Okay. Should I stand behind him just in case? Here, no, I want you to protect me in case this thing. I'm going to hide behind you because I don't want to. Oh, okay. Well, I think I can that I can handle. All right, let's try it again.
Yeah.
I just want to make. Last time I was here, there was a guy who was shooting marshmallows out of a rifle, it was this modified. The vacuum cube. You guys remember that?
Yes.
That thing went fast. Yeah, it went right up. It went right up there, didn't it? The marshmallow might still be there. All right, let's try it out. Come on. Oh, that was a little low.
Yeah.
Let's try it again. Let's try it again.
Come on.
That was a perfect pass. See?
We didn't want it to go too high.
No. The well, congratulations. The is this prompted an interest in any of you wanting to be like engineers or designers or work on technology, stuff like that?
No, not really. No? I want to go to college for basketball.
You want to be a basketball player? Yeah, everybody wants to be a basketball player. I understand until they get college. And how tall is your dad and mom?
I'm not that tall.
Yeah, okay. just want to make that point. You might keep up with your science homework. All right, everybody. Pete, where are you? Look at this guy right over here. All right, we're proud of you guys.
Thank you.
Good.
Yep. Excellent.
All right, you take care of yourself.
You too.
All right, what do we got here, young people? These are my Chicago homies right here. Right?
Yep.
Where you guys go to school?
I go to Lincoln Park.
Lincoln Park?
Go to Hale San Francisco High School.
It is great to see you both, excellent schools. And what's your name?
JT.
Lydia. All right, so you guys started getting into robots, is that right?
Yeah.
How did you first become interested in robots?
Well, in Chicago, there weren't very many opportunities for robotics. So what my mom did was she went out inside that she would bring Mickey into Chicago. So now we've created over half the teams in Chicago. And
so your mom basically started the whole robot trend.
Yeah.
I like that in her.
We got to the Taste of Chicago, and that's how more people get brought in.
That's great. So do you have a bunch of different robotics teams in Chicago?
Yes.
Does Hales Franciscan have one team, and then Lane has a different one? Or do you guys all come from different schools and sort of form like a club?
We all come from different schools.
Uh-huh.
My team this year combined with Chicago Knights, since we're having the trouble.
Uh-huh. Excellent. All right, so looks like you guys have been doing pretty good. What do we have here? Is this an example of some of your handiwork here?
Yeah, this is our FRC robot from this year.
Uh-huh.
It played a game sort of like lacrosse, where it had a 2-foot ball that it picked up.
Right.
So this arm comes down.
Yeah.
And then the rollers suck it up, and then it brings it back. And then we have a foot over here that we use to kick the ball.
Oh, I see. Okay. Now this one we're not modeling in here, I gather.
We can show the arm going down and the wheels.
But yeah, but no actual ball.
Yeah.
Because we'd hit one of these guys, which, you know, I like them. Actually, this is a pretty good group. There's some where I wouldn't have minded, but I don't see them here. All right, let's see.
So there's two different drivers for it.
Uh-huh.
There's the part that controls the arm going up and down.
Right.
And then there's the part that controls the back part.
Got it. And so these are all manually controlled.
Yeah. The game is broken up into two parts. There's one part where the robot drives by itself.
Right.
For 30 seconds, and then there's 2 minutes where the robot is driven against 5 other robots on the field. So 3-3 game.
That sounds pretty fun. Yeah. So how long did it take you to construct this particular robot?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah. 6 weeks to design and build, and everybody's given the challenge at the same time.
Outstanding. Well, I'm so proud of you guys. Come on, let's take a good picture next to your robot. Here. You come over here. You get over here. And Pete, make sure the robot's in the picture. All right. Fantastic. All right. So has this spurred an interest in you wanting to stay in engineering, technology, things like that?
Yes. Before joining this, I didn't know that there were so many engineering jobs out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But now that I know that, I want to go into security.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be one of those engineers.
Yeah.
You too. We especially need young women in engineering and sciences. All right? I'm looking forward to seeing you guys do great things. I'm proud of you. Tell everybody back home I said hi.
Thank you.
All right? You bet. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
What's your name?
I'm Eric.
Good to see you, Eric. Where are you from?
See you. I'm from San Diego.
San Diego? So what year are you in school now?
I'm a senior now.
You're a senior?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what you're going to be doing next year?
I'll be going to Harvard.
I'll bet you are. So what do we got here?
Yeah, so in summary, what I was able to do was use computers to speed up the discovery of new medicine for the flu. And flu right now is a really big threat, where you have strains like H5N1, uh-huh. H7N9.
I spend a lot of time worrying about the possibility of pandemic. Yeah.
Right, and they're only one mutation away from possibly causing a pandemic.
Right.
And the problem is we have no really effective treatments for it. The flu vaccines, so like flu shots, they take several months to prepare, and that's a time window where millions of people could be dying.
Right.
And the current antiviral drugs, so like a pill you would take and you get better from the flu, they're losing their effectiveness because of resistant flu strains.
Right.
And so there's this urgent need for new flu medicine to kind of hold back the pandemic wave while vaccines are being developed.
Right.
And so right now, drug companies are still kind of in that industrial era of drug discovery where they found, hey, we can make robots do everything. So they make robots test millions and millions of chemicals to just find a few that might become real drugs.
But that's not very efficient.
Exactly. And so
it's sort of trial by error as opposed to...
Exactly. It's like kind of brute force rather than reasoning by logic.
Right.
And what I've been able to do is use computers to first virtually go through huge chemical libraries and predict which ones would be most likely to work, and then followed by only testing that small fraction that's most likely to work.
Right.
And so I've been able to take a compound library of almost 500,000 chemicals, and then using computer modeling, isolate the top 237.
And what is allowing you to, what are the factors that allow you to winnow this down? What is it that you can anticipate would make a possible vaccine more effective?
Right. So it's actually not a flu shot. It'd actually be a drug. So it would be like, yeah, it's a curative rather than a preventive.
Okay. So rather than the traditional giving you a little bit of flu to
right.
boost your immunity to the flu,
this is actually a chemical cure. Right.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. And one of the great advantages to one of the targets that I'm choosing to make these chemicals for is that it's highly conserved among flu strains, meaning that it could potentially work against any flu strain, even if you have no idea where it's coming from. And so basically, well, one of the ways that I'm looking at kind of finding these chemicals that work is actually kind of taking, well, how it works is you're targeting a protein of the flu virus. And so this is actually a 3D printed structure of one of the flu proteins that I'm targeting. And
this thing was in my nose just about 3 weeks ago. It lasted forever. Couldn't get rid of it. Not really, I'm just joking. All right, so this is a 3D model of a nasty flu bug right there.
Right, and what we do is I'm trying to find these little kind of chemicals like that. I'll kind of fit into this pocket right here and
right.
jam it and stop it from working.
Right.
And so, by doing this, so how the computer does it is it takes kind of the millions or the half a million different kind of chemical structures
right.
and fits each one in, and then it ranks them based on how well they fit. And so by doing that, if the ones that fit really well are kind of more predicted to...
More likely to...
Exactly.
To work. Now this is a pretty significant new direction in terms of developing a flu drug.
Right.
And you're only in high school. So the question is, has this approach gained sort of converts among the drug companies where they say to themselves, you know what, actually this is pretty promising?
Right. Well, so
or are you still, because of it's in its infancy, they don't know how smart you are, and it'll take them a while to figure it out.
Well, so research groups have started using these kind of new innovative tools for kind of, yeah, rational drug discovery.
Right.
And the problem, well, drug companies, they're huge, and because of that,
they're
kind of sluggish to responding to this kind of innovation. And so one big thing is actually kind of convincing them to kind of take up these different tools in order to make it more a much more efficient process.
Well, part of the reason this is so important, as you know, is because the economics of producing flu vaccines is not a big moneymaker for the drug companies.
Right.
If we can come up with computer models that narrow the R&D
by making it much cheaper, you can actually
start producing them and adapting them
right and making
quickly.
Them cheaper for the people
that's
that
exactly
need it.
Right. This is really important. This could end up being the start of saving millions of lives, huh?
Hopefully.
That's, you know, the you probably now. Do you also like? Are you like a champion lacrosse player?
No, play I the, fence though.
You fence. Come on over here. Right here. All right. I'm such an underachiever. You're going to do great.
Thank you.
I'll be on the lookout for this because we're spending a lot of time, trying to puzzle this out. So.
All right.
All right.